This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live online at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleague, Richard Pollock. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Michael Remus is allegedly joining us, but God forbid he be on time. 10 a.m. is an early wake up. And Ezzy's on vacation for the second week, and we still don't know why.
Yeah, we don't know why Ezzy's on vacation. We'll talk a little bit more about Ezzy later on in the show, but Remus is supposed to be contributing a little bit more and filling in for Ezra Ginsberg. It's, of course, late. It's 10:01 now.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to make it up for 10 a.m., Richie.
It's pretty difficult. And, you know, Remus told us he'd step up. He said he wouldn't meet us before for a pre-show meeting. He'd meet us at the studio. And what happened?
Unless he's picking us up some donuts right now.
I don't even care. I mean, you got to be on time.
I agree. I don't argue at all. Big show ahead for you here on TSN 1290 today. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, the agent for Winnipeg Jets defenseman Zach Bogosian, Bob Murray, is going to join us. Talk about the contract negotiations that got settled between the Jets and Bogosian earlier this week. Of course, he signed the big 7-year, $36 million contract. So Bob Murray is going to join us coming up in about 30 minutes' time. In about 90 minutes' time from the Globe and Mail, he's their media reporter. Steve Laggerente is going to be joining us to talk about the NHL TV contract here in Canada. This is the final year on the existing contract, so we're going to talk to Steve about the upcoming NHL contract and negotiations for that, which are going to open sometime in the next, probably the next month or so. The CBC's got an exclusive window right now to renew their contract, and then after that, I think that expires at the end of this month. We'll talk to Steve about that and see how that's going to play out. Of course, all your hockey talk from around the NHL and your Winnipeg Jets, but let's start on this Saturday morning with the Jets signing of Zach Bogosian. Happened earlier this week, Monday, I believe. 7-year deal, $36 million. Average annual value of $5.14 million. That's the salary cap hit. Richie, you know, yay or nay on this deal?
I think yay, Drew. I like the deal. I think that, you know, I had him, when I did the analysis, I had him at 5.5 a year for 6 years. So you give him another year and you take away a little bit of cash because, you know, the year security for him, and you lower the cap. And I thought that's fair. I thought you got pretty much fair market value for Zach Bogosian. I think this is probably of the three negotiated deals, the three significant negotiated deals that Kevin Cheveldayoff and staff had this summer. I thought Bogosian's deal was the best. I think the reason for that is it has a certain amount of upside, but I also like the limited downside. I said this on HNL this week, you know. Worst comes to worst with Zach Bogosian. Worst comes to worst. He doesn't turn out to be the top two pairing defenseman that you maybe hoped, or number one defenseman you'd hoped. But I don't think you're getting any worse here than a three, the worst, a four. So you have a second-pairing defenseman who can log big minutes, making 5.1 a year for the next 7 years. You could do a lot worse than that, and that's if he doesn't pan out. If he pans out, you're getting some nice value through a really nice core years, 22 through 29.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't expect much, you know, slippage in his game, especially because it generally takes defensemen longer to develop.
So 23 through 30, excuse me, is 23 now. But 23 through 30. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's not to like about that?
I agree with you. I mean, you look at that and there's, I mean, it's hard to nitpick on that contract. You know, you look at the Wheeler contract and you look especially at the Brian Little contract and you can say, okay, there's aspects of that I don't like. This one, it's within range. It's, you know, it's a good term. I don't think at any point in time, like you said, even if his offensive game doesn't come around, and this is what he is as a offensive defenseman. Okay, that's not your number one priority. If Zach Bogosian continued developing as a defensive defenseman, given the other players you have on this roster,
right,
and he becomes, you know, a top flight shutdown defenseman, who may or may not produce on the offensive side, you're still okay with that because of the other, you know, the Tobias Enstrom and the Dustin Byfuglien's. Right. They can provide you with the offensive punch, and Zach Bogosian can provide you with the top pairing shutdown defense if he continues to develop, and I expect that he's going to.
And you're getting a lot of term here, too, you know, the McDonough contract. McDonough is a better defenseman as far as I'm concerned.
Ryan McDonough of the New York Rangers.
But you're paying for more RFA years in McDonough's case,
mm-hmm.
and you're getting less term. So, I mean, that part of it I like from the Jets' perspective. You know, Zach Bogosian as a player, Drew, is interesting because he's a great skater. He's as good of a skater as you're going to find on the back end. He's physical. I like his leadership ability. I like his competitiveness. I like a lot of things. His offensive game, yeah, it's coming around a bit. He's got a good shot. If he can get it on net more, he'll be more effective. If he joins the rush, which I thought he did at the end of last season very successfully, I think he'll take another step. You know, does he have the sense of the game? I don't think so enough. Can you develop that? You know, the jury's out on that as well. You'll get differing views depending on who you speak to. But I think overall as a package, Drew, you're getting a really solid defenseman and a guy who wants to be in Winnipeg, a guy who likes the city. The overall package, I think this is a solid deal.
What do you mean by the hockey sense? Why don't you expand on that a little bit? Because, I mean, I know what you're saying, but yeah, you know, just maybe a quarter of a step slow? Not slow in terms
reads,
of foot speed,
reads,
but in his
yeah.
reads.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, and that is another factor for his offensive ability. And sometimes, you know, you say, okay, you know, why can he take the next step offensively? Well, you know, what is that dependent on? Is he not making the right reads, as you're mentioning? And defensively, is he sometimes not seeing as well? You know, you can develop certain parts of your game that make you better. I don't know if you can develop that part of your game. Doesn't mean he can't still develop as a defenseman, though. I think it does limit him top-end ability. You know, I think it does limit his ability to be a number one guy, to be honest with you.
If his offensive game, because I mean,
just didn't although like that lack of sense a little bit, I think limits his ability to be a number one guy, but doesn't limit his ability to be a very, very good defenseman in the National Hockey League for a long, long time.
Would you say that he's even more coming into his own and his game is still developing in his own zone, given what you saw at the end of the year towards maybe some of his aggression a little bit
yeah.
and his leadership, especially when you think back against that game against the Islanders?
Yeah, the Islanders game or the Leafs game when he hopped in and fought Corbin and Holzer. I thought the leadership ability, the confidence in himself, confidence is such a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that. I think Charlie Huddy has done a nice job with him.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up is how yeah. important has Charlie Huddy been yeah. to Zach Bogosian?
He's been important, for sure. And Bogosian, you know, Bogosian has potential. You know, drafted third overall at Peterborough, he's got great skill. I mean, you watch the guy in practice and you think, wow, he's a dynamo.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in game situations, and I think he's improved in this. He gets a little bit lost, but I think he's improved in this a lot. I think they want to find a consistent partner for him for the long haul, and I don't know who that's going to be. You know, maybe are him and Enstrom really going to get a good shot to play together for a long time? I don't know. Excuse me. You know, what's the plan with Byfuglien? What's the plan with Klitsam and all that stuff? So we'll see who his pairing is, you know, going to be. And I think the Jets over the long haul foresee Jacob Trouba and Zach Bogosian forming the right side of their defense for the next 10 years.
Sure.
I really believe that.
Well, I mean, for good reason. I mean, yeah. There's no reason why the Jets can't think that given everything we've seen from him. I mean, you look at sort of the comparables, you know,
yep.
You look at some of the other guys who are around his age who've signed big deals. Now, you know, you look at the guy like Tyler Myers in Buffalo. Now, Tyler Myers, obviously, I mean, he signed his huge contract and he wasn't close to being a UFA when he signed that contract because he was just coming off of his entry level
yep.
deal. But, I mean, that's a guy who's got a cap hit of $5.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And given everything you've seen of Tyler Myers and Zach Bogosian, I think it's pretty clear. I think you'd agree with me. I hope you'd agree with me that Zach Bogosian's the player you'd rather have between the two of them.
Yeah, at this time you would. And again, you're buying out more RFA years for Myers in that contract as opposed to the UFA ones and Bogosian's. But yes, Drew, I agree in terms of, you know, Myers has struggled. Yeah, Buffalo's hoping the reacquisition of Henrik Tillander will help his development. Buffalo needs to not play in their own zone as much. That's hurting him. But Myers isn't the best skater. His offensive ability is kind of developing a little bit later. So, yeah, I would agree with that in terms of the players right now. Myers can develop, though. I don't think, certainly the ceiling hasn't been reached for him.
Right, but that has been reached for Bogosian either for that extent.
Sure.
So, you know, how does he develop that offensive game that we talked about? I mean, is there a magic formula, or is it just sort of,
you know,
if it comes, it comes?
In terms of joining the rush, that comes, I think, with development of confidence and who he's playing with and how the team plays and the system and such. You know, hit the slap shot is a great slap shot. Hitting the net is important.
Mm-hmm.
you know, making the right reads is important. Obviously, getting power play time is important, and that's another thing for power play, you know, for production point-wise, points-wise. You know, he hasn't had the opportunity to play as much power play time because Enstrom and Byfuglien are better than him offensively. So, and that's really, that's fine. I mean, the Jets understand that. I mean, Byfuglien and Enstrom should be getting a lot big time power play minutes because they're very good offensively.
Mm-hmm.
So Bogosian, part of it's the lack of opportunity, but it's rightfully so. I mean, he's not at that same level as those guys right now.
Offensively.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
And I mean, and you, coming into this year, you'd expect him, he's going to be their, your second pairing power play defenseman.
Yes.
You know, him and Klitsam. Maybe him, maybe he moves over to the other side and Trouba plays some power play.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, but I
mean, we'll
see. Exactly. But I mean, but for the most part, the Jets are still going to rely on him to be in his own zone, to be the same kind of defenseman he's been in his own zone for the last couple of years.
And I mean, play against the best players. Play against the best players in the other team. That's important too. This team, we're going to talk about it later on in terms of review of the offseason thus far and likely review of the offseason overall, because we don't expect them to do much more, if anything.
Yeah, you expect this is the 23-man roster that they have.
Right. The defense relies on Bogosian a ton to play rock-solid defense because there's nobody on the team that can play defense like him. And that's a good thing in some ways because it speaks to Bogosian's skill, and that's a worrisome thing if you're a Jets fan because it also speaks to the lack of defensive ability of some other players on the roster.
Sure, and that's certainly an area of concern for the Jets because
it ought to be.
We don't believe that Grant Klitsam can be a second pairing defenseman, or we'd be surprised that that's
well. I'm surprised. But can you be it on a good team?
Well, obviously, anybody can be anything on a lousy team.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think when they signed Grant Klitsam to that extension, I was a little surprised that there wasn't a supplemental move. And that they seem to be penciling him into that on that second pairing on the left side there.
Yeah, you know, it's a leap of faith.
It's a big leap of faith
and
for a guy.
Especially against, you know, we've talked about it many times now in the show, but against teams, you know, you're going to be logging against Chicago, the Hosas and the guys like that, and St. Louis, a lot of depth on the offensive ranks. So you're talking about teams like that. You talk about Minnesota. There's a certain amount of depth there now, getting Pominville in there. Dallas. You're going to go up against the Ray Whitneys and such. Can Klitsam defend against the second guys on the other squad? Or actually, not even going to say that. The first guys, because if he does play with Bogosian, he'll logging first pairing minutes. You know, or maybe they put Enstrom with Bogosian, put Byfuglien with Klitsam. That's a nightmare too, I think. So, you know, yeah, it's concerning. To me, as a fan, or as an analyst, whatever it may be, if I take a step back from the Jets this offseason and talk about what they addressed and what they didn't address, they have not addressed, and we'll talk about it later, the defense to a reasonable level. And I think that concerns me.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we'll talk about the new and improved Dustin Byfuglien, if photos are to be believed. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. Continuing our discussion about the Jets' signing of Zach Bogosian and a little bit about the defense as a whole.
This is Remus's best show, by the way.
Yeah, he's never been better.
Yeah.
What do you make about these Dustin Byfuglien photos? I mean, is it much ado about nothing, or is there some legitimacy to thinking that, holy, maybe the message finally got through to the guy?
I have a couple of views on that. One, I think the pictures are likely accurate. So, I mean, I think he's probably dropped a fair amount of weight, and I think that's a good sign for the Jets organization. But a couple of things. First off, I love the fact that you're paying a guy $5.2 million and you're applauding when he's in shape. You know, the guy gets paid $5.2 million. Million. And he's in shape, allegedly, doing his job, and we're applauding him. Isn't that implicit in the contract that you need to be, you're getting paid so much money that you need to at least take care of yourself and try and control that part of your performance? That being said, you know, Drew, I think it certainly helps the Jets in terms of his ability to move around the ice. That was a huge issue last year. No pun intended. and I think he can log bigger minutes, which helps you. He can move the puck. He can join the rush. He can get back on the rush when he joins the rush. That's important. So it's a great sign. Now, the question really is to me, if Byfuglien is in good shape and able to contribute, because his weight fluctuates, do you wait for him to – and he has started well in a couple seasons in the past.
Sure. Well, the last year in Atlanta, he was an all-star.
Yeah. Do you wait for him to have a great start, and then do you move? I think that'll be an interesting sidebar to the season is, you know, while you're watching the Jets perform, if Bufflin does perform at a high level, do you fall in love with his ability to perform when he's in shape, or do you say we're going to sell high and get something for this guy? And that'll be interesting to watch.
It's a fair point. I mean, the fear, of course, if you trade the guy like that and he's in shape, and he's going to be in this shape for the rest of his career, is what kind of talent are you giving up? Because it's a talent, you know, that's relatively rare in the NHL. There's nobody with that skill set and that size, you know,
sure,
and skill combination that's in shape like that. The question, of course, is, like you said, you know, if he's in shape for the first 3 months, does it begin to slip after that? And does he go back to the previous ways where, I mean, you know, he just was, you know, he wasn't in professional athlete shape.
Yeah, and you got 3 years left in the deal. He has a modified no trade clause, but he just submits a 5-team no trade list each year. So it's not like that's restricted. The question is, you know, will teams be interested in him if he's in shape? And I think absolutely they would be. You know, I don't think he projects into the Jets' long-term plans. I think eventually when Trouba gets up there, they'd probably want to move him and add something to the forward core. So the question is, when do you pull that trigger? And can you pull that trigger earlier rather than later because he appears to be in good shape? So sure, there's interesting angles on that, Drew. I mean, he contributes a ton, though, in terms of moving the puck out of their own zone and on the power play.
If he's in shape,
yeah,
do you think his defensive game improves?
That's the other angle of it, right? You know, his defensive play will improve because of his mobility, for sure. But he was not exactly, you know, he's not exactly Larry Robinson out there when he was in shape in the past.
Well, that's what I'm saying. All of his defensive shortcomings haven't been directly tied to being out of shape.
It's a willingness to defend. It's being lazy in his own zone. You know, I remember last year, I think it was against Carolina, 1 or 2 seconds left.
You got to do is front the guy, tie up
yeah,
the stick.
And that's just laziness, right? You know, he gets caught watching and he wants to jump into the offensive play. You know, some offensive defensemen get caught with that laziness. It's not just him. You know, they don't want to engage defensively. They want to engage offensively, so they conserve their energy. You know, the eyes light up when there's an offensive opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see that with a lot of guys. But it hurts him. So I think his defensive game will improve, but it's a willingness to want to defend that'll take it to the next level. I don't think it's an ability to read the play. He is very smart out there.
But you talked about hockey sense before with Zach Bogosian.
As good as you get in terms of hockey sense on the team, as far as I'm concerned. You could argue he's the best passer. I would say that he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a good shot. He sees the game. He's the smartest guy actually out there on the ice. But does he want to engage defensively? Because then he can be the total package, for sure. Especially if he's in shape. But again, this gets back to the point you mentioned. You know, are you scared to trade him because of what he can do somewhere else? You can't run your organization like that, though. You have to make the best decision for your organization, and you can't worry about what would happen somewhere else if you think that moving him could help you.
Right. You can't be afraid of the unknown. You can just deal with what you can control.
Right. That's right.
And, I mean, you know, when the first year the Jets were here, they had a ton of money tied up in their back end.
Yep.
I think it was the most in the NHL, if I recall the analysis you did correctly.
Percentage-wise, yeah. The analysis right before the season started, when the Jets returned, was every other defense and the Jets' defense, what percentage of cap room it ate up. And the Jets had the highest percentage of their cap tied up in defensemen.
And you look at the team again this year, they have a ton of money tied up in their back end. I mean, $22 million out of 64. So it's, more than a third of their cap space is tied up in their back end.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do wonder, you know, if Zach Bogosian is available, or pardon me, if Dustin Bufflin, comes out strong, like you said, what could you get for him on the open market? If Philly has another struggles with defense, or, you know, if any team out there really is struggling defensively, what, and Dustin Bufflin is the all-star defenseman that we saw in the last year in Atlanta, how enticing will that be for another NHL team? Because, again, it's a skill set like no other in the NHL.
I think it's very enticing. And I think you might be able to shore up your the middle of the ice with a move like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, also I think you have to trade him earlier rather than later because he sometimes tires throughout the year. So there's a lot of moving parts here when it comes to Dustin Byfuglien and how he affects, you know, the entire organization in terms of his performance. Because you think about it, you know, him and Enstrom together, can they defend enough? And if not, can you put him and Klitsam together? There's an issue. And, you know, where does Trouba factor into it? Where does Mark Stewart factor into it? The power play, huge factor. Maybe you get really good performances from some guys, and because he's lost weight, you can put him up front for a little bit.
Sure.
You don't need help on the right side as much now because you've added Frolik and you've added Setoguchi. But who's to say that guys can't move around?
Right.
So, I mean, you want roster flexibility, and he gives you that to an extent. So who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, he doesn't want to play forward, and that's a factor as well.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean...
But Bogosian's contract will affect this because you're paying three guys on the back end over $5 million. Bogosian's at 5.1 a year, Byfuglien's at 5.2, and Enstrom's at 5.75. That is a lot of money tied up, and you could argue, Drew, $15, $16 million tied up, and you could argue that none of those guys are number one defensemen in the National Hockey League. And I think that's a pretty sound argument.
Sure, there are. I mean, we think that they're all, yeah, they're all number, you know, number twos and number threes for certain, but they do have holes in each individual game. And I mean, you know, that's nitpicking to some extent.
No,
but
that's true.
It's also a fact. I mean, it's a lot of money to have in your back end without having a clear-cut number one there.
It is.
Which just goes to show you, I think, how difficult it is to get a clear-cut number one.
It's very difficult.
And how few there actually are in the 30-team NHL.
That's absolutely true.
There's probably less than 10 clear-cut number ones?
No, I don't think it's that little. But probably less than 20.
Also, I mean, so there you go. I mean, it goes to show you that there's, you know, one third of the NHL teams are taking two and three guys and plugging them into number one roles out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be able to answer this question, but it's more of a general topic anyways.
Sure.
You know, what do you think, like, you know, we've said on this program sort of like, you know, at some point in a guy's career, they are what they are.
Right.
You don't expect them to change. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien's, you know, 28 years old.
Right.
If he's in as good shape or, you know, as reasonable shape as you know, as we think he is based on these photos, if he's in professional athlete shape, I don't know. Like, what do you think clicked? What, you know, obviously you don't know the actual answer.
Well,
but
it's when his belt buckle couldn't click.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah,
the seatbelt wouldn't wrap around all the way. But, I mean, it is sort of bizarre that a guy at that point in time all of a sudden decides, you know, I'm not in good enough shape.
I don't know if it's his agent. I don't know if it's the team. I don't know if it has to be him at the end of the day. Who controls that? I mean, does he like the way he looks? Does he like the way he feels? Is it something like that? Or is it something to do with hockey? Is it his teammates rubbing off on him? There's many things that it could be, and we're not going to necessarily find out. The problem is reverting back. And so...
You would think in the course of a season, though, given the amount of time they're on the ice...
That's the craziest part about it, Drew. I know you're getting with that. The craziest part about it is if anybody plays hockey on a daily basis, any of our listeners play hockey on a daily basis, you got to be eating a ton of food to be putting on weight... While you're doing that.
Because you're burning so many calories, it's almost by default you would lose weight.
That's right.
But last year, he wasn't getting any smaller as the season went on.
He got bigger, I thought.
Yeah.
So, I know he had the injury for a little bit there, and I think that contributed. But
if you're not on the ice and you're not able to burn those calories and you're still consuming the same number of calories, you're going to get bigger. But if he's on the ice for 82 games and he's on the ice for practices in between, you know, you can't help but think that the weight you come into training camp at should be almost your maximum weight that you come in for the entire season.
That's
you're not going to get bigger than that, think.
You're not going to do a ton of lifting, I don't think, either.
Yeah.
If he's doing any lifting.
Right.
You know.
So if he comes in at, you know, if he comes in and he's, you know, in reasonable shape and he's in athletic shape for himself, you would think that he should be able to maintain that level and that endurance for most of the season.
That's a fair point.
But it's
Injuries aside,
obviously, if an injury happens and he's out for 3 weeks and maybe it's not a weight-related injury, as we suspect, you know, the last couple of injuries have been.
Yeah, the stress on his knees and such. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, if you can't burn those calories and you're still consuming 2,000 calories a day, it's going to catch up to you and it's going to catch up to you in a hurry. Let's leave it there. When we come back, Bob Murray, Zach Bogosian's agent, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Half past the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, And the website for your latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. No, we lost him? Okay, Timmy's going to get him back on the line. Looks like we have we lost Bob. We had Bob Murray, then we lost him. So we'll call him right back and get him on the line there.
It's the ploy. He's trying to get a better contract from us.
From us?
Oh, yeah.
What are we offering?
We're offering an hour with Remus because, you know.
Remus made it here, for the record.
Half an hour late.
Yeah, half an hour late, but that's okay. It was a good effort. Yeah. He's going to get the show online real quick, so that'll
right.
work.
And he actually is going to get this Bob Murray interview online real quick as well. So we are appreciative of that. And later on in the show, we'll be calling a vacationing Ezra Ginsberg.
Yeah.
Which will be interesting.
Yeah, that will be interesting because we're not sure what he's on vacation from.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah. It's a lot of sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
He texted me this morning. I'll read it later on. I think our listeners will enjoy what Ezra was up to this morning.
Yeah, it's very typical Ezra.
Included a burrito and a bed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Anyways, we'll get Bob Murray on the line momentarily here, Zach Bogosian's agent, to talk about the contract that he signed with the Winnipeg Jets earlier this week. 7 years, $36 million contract, the average annual value of $5.14 million to be a mainstay on the Jets.
Yeah, interesting was that number at the end of the day because there's always usually more round numbers and comes in at 5.14.
I believe we have him. Bob Murray, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Happy to be here. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Things are good. No complaints.
That's good. Glad to hear that. Bob, at any point in your negotiations with the Winnipeg Jets on behalf of your client, Zach Bogosian, did you think this was going to end in an arbitration hearing?
Not really. My dealings with Shetty all summer had been, I think, pretty good. I think we both understood that it was a bit of a process to get through it. I think we both needed to a degree, to figure out what the market really was, and that became a little bit clearer as we got closer. And I think both sides felt that it made sense to do a longer-term deal, which obviously we would not be able to do if it went to arbitration. So, arbitration was there, and I think both sides, certainly we were prepared for it, but we're optimistic that we were going to be able to get a deal done.
Bob, did the contracts, you know, Travis Hamonic, Carl Osner, Ryan McDonough, did any of those contracts concern you while you were negotiating?
No. As contracts come in, they all affect the market in different ways, and, you know, the comparables and comparisons from player to player are what they are. I think the Ryan McDonough one maybe clarified the market a little bit more than some of the others. So, no, they didn't concern us, and in some ways helpful as more get done. It helps you to establish what the value is.
Bob, you talked about negotiating with Kevin Cheveldayoff. Was Cheveldayoff the primary point man for your negotiations, or was that with Larry Simmons, or both of them?
In most of the calls that we had, it was Chevy with Larry Simmons and Craig Heisinger, Zinger, I guess, as everybody calls him.
Yeah.
They were all on the phone together. But the majority of the discussions were with Chevy.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Bob Murray. He's the agent for Zach Bogosian with Pro Athletes Management Incorporated. Bob, we heard from reporters and from Zach himself in the conference call announcing, you know, the contract, that he likes Winnipeg and he wanted to stay in Winnipeg long term. What is it about Winnipeg that he's so fond of?
I guess a whole lot of things, but Zach has liked it from when he first got there a couple of years ago. He really has felt comfortable there. He's a bit of an outdoors person. He likes to hunt, likes to fish, likes to be outside camping and all that. So I think he likes the, you know, kind of the climate there. For whatever reason, he feels that he's been embraced by the fans and feels very comfortable with the people in the community. Feels very much at home being around the community. And I think the hockey atmosphere there has been been tremendous. You know, coming from Atlanta, where he played his first 3 years, it was, you know, not a hockey market, I guess. And the enthusiasm of the Winnipeg fans has been overwhelming, and I think that's been great for Zach. So he comes from the beginning. He likes it in Winnipeg. He wanted to stay there and wants to stay there. So it's been a great fit.
Bob, you know, when you look at the contract as a whole, he signs for 7 years, gets 5.14 a year, and also there was the inclusion of a no movement clause. How important was the inclusion of the no movement clause to getting the deal done?
It was very important to Zach and I, and I mentioned that to Chevy from early on in the discussions that we wanted that in there, and really the reason behind it is what we just talked about, is that Zach wants to stay in Winnipeg. He would love to play his whole career there. Again, he likes it. The organization has treated Zach, and I think the other players, very, very well. He feels it's a first-class organization, very comfortable with the coaches. I think Zach mentioned how close he's gotten to Chelly Huddy, who works with the defense, and the whole situation is just what Zach likes and is thriving on.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Bob Murray. He's the agent for Zach Bogosian. He's also with Pro Athletes Management Incorporated. Bob, Zach Bogosian, I guess, was fortunate in some extent to having the final arbitration date on the calendar, which was supposed to be yesterday. Obviously, it never came to that. So he got to see the Brian Little and Blake Wheeler negotiations play out beforehand. Did Little and Wheeler signing long-term contracts have any bearing on Zach Bogosian agreeing to a long-term contract?
I think Zach was very happy that Little and Wheeler both signed long-term. He felt that they were very important parts of the piece of having a good team. So I think that was encouraging to Zach. But from very early on in the discussions with Winnipeg, both the Jets and we had talked about a long-term contract for Zach. So that was, I guess, always on the table and what the sides were trying to achieve. And I think it made it a little bit easier for Zach to agree to that once he saw Little and Wheeler also sign long-term.
Bob, you know, we talked about the no movement clause being important, but in terms of the term that was signed and the cap hit, was there one thing that ended up getting that deal done? Like, did they go the extra year? Did they go up to 5.14? Did you come down? And how did that negotiation get finalized?
It was again, Chevy kind of uses the word process all the time, and it was a process right from early on in the summer. Discussions about where we would go with it, different lengths of term, and as we got a little bit closer with the arbitration looming, I think it just forced both sides to figure what the right deal was. And I think at the end of the day that Chevy and I were able to sit down and figure that this is what made sense for both sides.
If you had to say, you know, what was more the contentious issue, would it have been term or would it have been dollars per year?
I don't know that those were separated. It was all part of the discussions, all part of the process that we went through and trying to arrive at what made sense.
Bob, we'll let you go on this final question. In the course of the negotiations, how much discussion was there between yourself and Kevin Cheveldayoff about the team going forward, the long-term future of the team, and sort of the salary expenditures in the near and long-term future?
I didn't hear the beginning of that. How much discussion was there about that? Is that what the question was?
Yeah, how important was that for the negotiations?
I think Zach understood where the Jets were heading with the guys that they've brought in. They've added some players over the summer through trades and free agency. I think have made a sincere commitment to the core of the team, and Zach, that was important to Zach. Zach wants to win. He wants to win in Winnipeg, and I think he sees the organization heading in that direction and getting closer and closer to that. I think he feels from the ownership that there's a commitment to win in Winnipeg, and Zach is really excited about that.
Bob Murray, agent for Winnipeg Jets defenseman Zach Bogosian, thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
happy to, guys, and good luck up there.
Thanks very much, Bob. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Big thank you to Bob Murray, agent for Zach Bogosian. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available both on illegalcurve.com and on tsn1290.ca. You can download it, listen to it at your convenience. You can listen to the whole show at your convenience at both of those locations as well. You know, today, what, August 3rd now, you can sort of say right now that this is the start of, at least for the next couple of weeks, this is pretty much the start of the Winnipeg Jets front office offseason. You know, they've done their work for this offseason. They've finalized all their negotiations. We both expect that this is going to be it in terms of roster moves. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't expect that there's going to be any late August signing of Kyle Wellwood like there has been, you know, there was 2 years ago or whatever it was. This is pretty much, I think, and you can disagree with me if you want, Richie, this is pretty much the roster going forward, the 23-man roster that you're going to see at training camp and for the most part to start the season.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. You know, and you know, Matt Halaschuk is the sort of the wild card because he's on a two-way deal. But you know, Matt Halaschuk is the guy that you might see come up that's not on a one-way contract, right, and make this team.
That's right.
So, you know, we want to review the moves by Kevin Sheveldayoff over this offseason and sort of not grade them per se, just talk about them in the overall scheme of the Jets both this year and in future and how we see these moves, mm-hmm, you know, how we evaluate this move. Let's start with the guys that he signed. And there's only two of them. That's Adam Pardy and Matt Halaschuk. Are those signings just ways of improving the Jets' depth, both in Winnipeg and to some extent in St. John's?
Yeah, I think so, Drew. I actually think Halaschuk could be a useful player on that fourth line right side. But I like the fact that the two-way contract, you do improve the depth of St. John's if need be. Pardy's a one-way deal. I didn't understand that contract, frankly. But, you know, gets another body in there, so I guess that improves your depth in that respect. But what Halaschuk can do, Drew, and I think it's an interesting part, you know, you have Peluso signed and you have Thorburn. So your right side right now is first line Wheeler, second line Setoguchi, third line Frolik, fourth line Halaschuk or Peluso or Thorburn. Now, mm-hmm, the question is this. Peluso and Thorburn are both on one-way deals.
Sure.
Okay. Now, they're not for much. I mean, Peluso's at just over 500,000, and I believe Thorburn's at just over 700,000. I'll just confirm that now.
Thorburn is at 866.
Yeah. So you have 866 for him and Peluso at 562. The question is, you know, how do you want to utilize that spot? And I think what the Jets want is roster flexibility. And what I mean by that is, well, you know, you're playing against St. Louis. You might want Peluso in there because they're a big, strong team. You're playing against maybe Nashville. Maybe you want Halaschuk in there because they're trying to build towards speed and maybe a little bit more scoring and such. They don't have a lot of talent. But you see what I mean? You have the flexibility of playing one player against one team and one player against another team. You know?
Sure. If you're playing against the Leafs, who are much more rough and tumble, you'd want a guy who's able to throw down.
And then a guy in Halaschuk who has played that role in the past in another lineup. And I think that is important, too. He's not going to whine about it. Mm-hmm. He's not going to complain about it. He's going to be a pro's pro and not cause any problems in the dressing room, likely.
Looking at the guys that they lost, mm-hmm, you know, all together, you know.
Okay, go for it.
I was just going to say, I mean, the guys that they lost, Burmistrov obviously went back to the KHL. Mm-hmm. Antropov, Hainsey, Miettinen, Wellwood, and Santarelli.
I'll tell you one thing right now. Let me get in there. Okay. I'll tell you one thing, aside from Santarelli. All you need to know, mm-hmm, is nobody has touched any of these guys.
Right.
In the NHL, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
So give me all you want about how these guys are useful this and useful that. There's 30 general managers out there. They are all smart men. They haven't touched any of these guys.
In that, when you say they haven't touched them, with Mike Santarelli signed a two-way contract with Vancouver.
Yeah, that's he's from Vancouver.
He's from the Vancouver area. Other than Santarelli's two-way contract, mm-hmm, Wellwood, Antropov, and Hainsey remain unsigned in the NHL, mm-hmm, and Miettinen signed overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Antropov and Wellwood, I get.
I get all of them.
Really? You don't think that Ron Hainsey's being blackballed?
I don't.
Really? You don't think that there's not a role for Ron Hainsey for $1 million in the NHL as a defenseman?
We don't know what he's asking for, so we're in the dark in that respect. But this is the thing. The guys like him, it's not just him, guys like him are getting squeezed in this cap system. Look at Ryan Whitney. Same idea. They're getting squeezed. The veteran guys who have had their best days and are probably 5-6 guys, those spots are predominantly being filled by younger players on entry-level deals. That kind of player. The young developing guy. We'll work him in. We won't play against tough competition. All that. Do you want to pay a veteran, not only pay him money, which is over the minimum likely, or over the entry-level number likely,
sure,
but eat into the ability for the young guy to develop? You know, that's the question.
So you're not surprised at all that these guys haven't been signed?
I'm surprised a bit. They haven't been signed by, you know, early August, but I'm not absolutely shocked.
Okay, fair enough. Trading for Michael Frolik and Devin Setoguchi.
Yeah, you know, Drew, I like the fact that Frolik's controllable. I like the fact that he can kill penalties. I think he has some offensive ability, a little bit more than he's demonstrated. I don't mind that. You're trading lower-end draft picks. Setoguchi, I conflicted on a bit because I don't know if he gets you into the playoffs, and if not, you know, what do you get back for him if you do trade him? And if you trade him and you get second-round pick back, then you kind of artificially inflated your position in the standings and not really get anywhere.
Sure.
So that's my concern there. I think Setoguchi will score some so long as Scheifele can make the team and be productive. I think he might score some anyways, but he'll score more if he has a player in the middle who can actually pass. Jokinen can't do that. Mm-hmm. Slater doesn't have the offensive skill to do that. That's where your centers are right now. So that's an issue. Scheifele's big this season.
Oh, is he? That's what I was going to ask you. Is he the linchpin to the Jets' success this season?
You know, I don't want to say the linchpin, but he is a factor.
Like an integral factor. I think
he is an integral factor, Drew. Yeah, I do. I do.
Because, I mean, they don't have the depth up the middle.
Right.
Right now to allow to... I mean, they've eased they've eased Mark Scheifele into the lineup sort of by keeping him in the OHL for a couple extra years.
You're burning entry level now, regardless. Right.
He's 1 year closer to free agency wherever he plays this season.
Yeah, that's right.
And that second line center role, I mean, is a glaring spot. It's a glaring hole if he can't fill it.
And the problem is, it's all about roster construction. You could say Jokinen bounce back year, all that jazz, fine. But your second best right winger is a scorer.
Mm-hmm.
Your second best left winger is a scorer.
That being Kane and Setoguchi.
And so you can't have a center up the middle who's a scorer too and cannot pass.
Sure.
Like, that's the problem. So if you had two passers on the right and left side, maybe you say, okay, Jokinen can be a second line center, a bounce back year. You know, you don't want to bet on it, but it could happen. But him with Kane doesn't work. So with him and Kane and Setoguchi likely won't work either. So you want to put him with, you know, drop him down a bit and maybe change his role a bit.
Right.
Then the question is, can a guy move up to play between two scorers like Scheifele?
Who else can
do it?
Can Jokinen be a defensively responsible third-line center?
You know, that's the thing, Drew. Also, the question is, how do you play the third line? Is it a third-line kind of scoring role, or is it more so if he's playing with a guy like, you know, Tangrady or somebody like that, or James Wright, you're likely talking about a cycle guy.
Right.
You know, they're going to earn their money on the cycle. Can he be the checking guy? I mean, conceivably, a guy could to change his mind and become a checking guy. But Jokinen did make significant progress defensively under Brent Sutter.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because when he came from Calgary, when they signed him to that two-year contract last summer, there was a lot of talk about how he's come around defensively in the Calgary system, but, how he was,
you know,
a much more two-way player than ever before.
Well, I mean, but that also speaks to the fact that he wasn't a two-way player before, so he's come leaps and bounds. Doesn't mean he's come to a level that you want to trust him in that regard. He also can't win faceoffs, really. So that's a factor, too, in terms of that defensively responsible role,
right,
which Jim Slater can do. You need him to score, I think so.
You still want him as a scoring third line?
Well, that's kind of the way the roster is constructed, almost. You don't have a shutdown third line.
Well, Frolik is also defensively responsible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, the problem is their defense is not defensively responsible.
That's all. I mean, which is an issue that they still haven't. I mean, they haven't addressed that at all just by re-signing most of their defensemen.
Right. Yeah, what have they done up front?
Unless there's a scheme change in how they're going to play defense, and I don't see that happening.
I don't think it'd be a scheme change. His coaching staff will be the same. It doesn't mean they can't change it. I think likely it's a fact, can you get through to the players?
Well, I mean, that's the question. And then, you know, we tend to sort of fall on the side of, you know, Leopard can't change their spots.
Well, the problem in there is, you know, you've added a couple guys. You know, Frolik is defensively responsible, and Setoguchi can skate, move around the ice. I haven't watched him close enough defensively to see exactly what he's done, but young guys have trouble defensively. That's known. Mm-hmm. I mean, young guys have trouble doing a lot of things. Faceoffs too. So you're going to count on Shifley. And playing defensively responsible game as a center in the NHL is very difficult. Very difficult. And so he's got that added responsibility. He's got faceoffs. Coming up as a center is hard. It is the hardest position to play at a forward for sure.
Mm-hmm. You look at the guys the Jets re-signed. I mean, they had a ton of RFAs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't have any UFAs that were really of any significance. So that's certainly helpful. But there are RFAs. Klitsam, Little, Bogosian, Wheeler, Postma, Tangrady, Peluso, Montoya, Redmond. You know, did Kevin Cheveldayoff make the right decisions in keeping this core together? I was reading an interesting article on Grantland, ESPN's Grantland yesterday. It talked about how the Bears general manager, Bears general manager Phil Emery, isn't afraid of the unknown.
Yeah.
He's not afraid to let his guys go into contract years where they have the ability to become unrestricted free agents and the possibility they might lose him for nothing. He'd rather take that year, evaluate to really see what he has, as opposed to signing them long term when they might not be the right fit. Obviously, the Jets took a different approach. And I mean, is that the right approach? Is this team a team built for long term success now? Because the core is going to be together for the next number of years.
Their draft picks need to turn into not NHL players, but very effective NHL players for this core to take the next step. I think it's almost that simple. There are other factors as well, but they have to be able to take the next step. And if they aren't, this core itself cannot take this team to the next step, next level. No.
So on their own, if their draft picks, if their first round picks and their second round picks that we have high hopes for, or that the team obviously has high hopes for, if they turn into depth players or role players, third line guys, third pairing guys,
this team's in big trouble.
Is this team going to be middling for the next 3 to 5 years?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's just that simple that they have
I mean, you can always make trades and there's other parts that can move. But based on what we've seen from Kevin Cheveldayoff, he's not going to be Trader Jack here. Mm-hmm. And the prospects don't develop to the level that they hope. I mean, you've drafted Shifley 7, was it Trouba 9?
Yeah.
And then this year you drafted 13.
Yeah.
So your top 15, you have two top 10 picks and one top 15 pick. They all got to develop. You don't rush them. I'm not saying rush them by any means. Morrissey, put him in the dub for another year. I don't mind Trouba playing this year. I think he seems to be ready. I've seen him play a little bit. Shifley has seen him play a little bit too, not a ton. But they need to develop. I mean, Shifley needs to be at least a second-line center for this team, and an effective one. Trouba needs to be a top-four guy. It seems like he might even be a top-two guy, but he needs to be a top-four guy.
Sure.
Morrissey needs to be a top-four guy, too.
It's a good problem to have if Jacob Trouba develops and has to bump down the Bogosians, the Bufflins, and the Enstroms a little bit so that they get to play against weaker opponents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Jacob Trouba can develop, you know, obviously you expect with defensemen that they're the defensive side comes before the offensive side when it comes to defensemen.
Well, that depends on the defenseman. Trouba's more defensively inclined. He's developed an offensive game to the surprise of some.
Right.
So in that sense, sure.
But you would expect that Jacob Trouba is going to have an easier time in his own zone than necessarily up front to start.
I don't know. It's tough to play defense in the NHL, Drew.
I know it's tough to play defense, but when they're bringing him into the NHL this year.
Yeah, you bring him in, you put him on the third pairing.
Sure, you let him play easier minutes.
Yeah. That's right.
I mean, if you let him play the easier minutes, and if he's so head and shoulders above, again, that's a good problem to have.
That's exactly right. But you don't start him off in the top four and then let him fail.
Right.
Because the problem you have with prospects when you let him fail.
Well, we mentioned Tyler Myers earlier in the show. That's a guy who came in as a dominant player. They gave him this huge contract, and he hasn't really been able to.
But that team's a whole mess.
I know, but we saw Tyler Myers last year a bunch of times.
Yeah, he struggled. He struggled for sure. He wasn't moving well, and he's not the best skater. But, I mean, you know, that team changes the way they play. They pressure more offensively, and they do some different things, and they get him a more reliable D partner, and he can be a whole different player. You can't teach 6'8", Drew.
Right. That's fair enough. You can't teach 6'8". You're right. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to focus on a couple signings in the NHL, Jay Bouwmeester and Joe Pavelski. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock. Michael Remus has decided to grace us with his presence, so we thank him for that. Ezra Ginsberg is still on vacation until next week. Richie, you mentioned you heard from Ezzy before. Would you like to read the text message that Ezzy sent us? I assume he's making the most of his Saturday off, you know, good solid jog in the morning, you know, up and early, you know, enjoying the beautiful sunny day outside.
Text from Ezzy this morning at 9:20. Hi. As he always loves to say hi like 10 times in a row. Mm-hmm. I said hi. He said, ready for the show? ? And I said, yes, we are, Ezzy. We actually are ready for the show. He says, nice. I miss you guys.
I miss you guys. Meanwhile, he's about, you know, 10 minutes away from driving, so he could be here.
He then wrote, have a good show. I love you. And then I wrote, I was like laughing. And then he wrote, by the way, if you want some material for the show, I just woke up and made a chicken and egg breakfast burrito and then went back to bed.
Now, when he says he made a chicken and egg breakfast burrito.
Yeah, we were wondering, Remus, you can get in on this. We were wondering, he didn't make eggs, chicken, and then put it into a wrap, but he just must have warmed it up. But do they have frozen egg and chicken burritos?
I don't know. Did Hart make it?
Sorry. I don't know.
Did his roommate make it?
No, his roommate's at the lake.
There's no way he made chicken and egg breakfast burrito. There's just no chance.
Get him on the line. Remus, while we're going to go into Bomeister here.
Okay, Remus will work on getting Ezzy so he can join us on the program. Jay Bomeister signs with the St. Louis Blues, re-signs rather, or it's a contract extension. A 5-year deal, $27 million, an average annual value of $5.4
million.
He's 29 years old. So this is a contract. This is, you know, his last big contract in the NHL. Going to take him from the time he's, you know, 30, because it doesn't kick in until next year. Till the time that he's about 35 years old.
Yeah.
Do you like this deal?
You know, he takes a pay cut. Jay Bomeister hasn't become the offensive player people thought, and isn't aggressive really. You know, so he becomes a guy who's a good skating guy who can log big minutes, doesn't really get injured ever, moves the puck. He's going to be a nice compliment to a guy like Pietrangelo. Beautiful skaters, both of them. I think it's a little bit high, Drew. I know you get, you know, it's probably more like, I thought maybe be around the 4.5 range, 4.75 range, then a 5.4 range. You know, you talk about going 30 through 35 years. Bomeister's so dependable and isn't really that physical and plays an effortless style that I don't think he'll age maybe in a poor way. So I don't think the contract, the term, is going to be as much of an issue as it might be for a more physical defenseman who wears down a bit more. But I thought it was a little bit high just based on the fact that, you know, he's not your – I mean, he's going to pay top pairing defenseman. He's going to be top pairing in St. Louis with Shattenkirk and Leopold being the 3-4 there. But
and Pietrangelo as the number
two
there.
But he's probably, you know, your third best defenseman on the team.
Right.
Behind Shattenkirk and Pietrangelo. So I'm a little bit high, but I think he fits in exactly what they need. They need left side help. They need a guy who can log big minutes. You remember picking in with Hitchcock? He likes guys who can log big minutes, easy minutes. You know, they can do it. So I'm fine with the deal.
He can skate his way out of trouble for the most part.
Yeah, and based on the system that Hitchcock has, you know, it works.
How does his contract affect the negotiations for Alex Pietrangelo, who's a restricted free agent?
Not really.
He's an RFA with no arbitration rights, so he's, you know, got no leverage really.
He's Kane from last year, and I think the contract of McDonough, he'll get more than McDonough. I think Pietrangelo is going to be at something like a, if I had to guess, you know, 6 years, $40 million kind of deal. Yeah.
Okay.
He's that good. I mean, he's. You know, he can argue he's a top 10 defenseman in the National Hockey League.
So just under
didn't have a great year last year. It was better the year before, but still a very good defenseman.
So a guy with no leverage is going to get just under $7 million a year.
6 years, yeah.
Good. Okay. Yeah. If you're buying out UFA years there.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit less than that, but
it's not gospel. I put you on the spot there. I won't hold you exactly to it, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I mean, his leverage, of course, the leverage he has no arbitration rights. The leverage he has is that team without him.
Sure.
That's a leverage. The leverage for him is that Roman Polak would move into the number two slot on the right side, and their second pairing would be Leopold and Polak.
And that's not something you want. Especially for a team like the Blues who have, I mean, every year it's, you know, this is the year, this is the year, this is the year.
That's funny. I read an article in the Post-Dispatch this morning about that kind of thing. You know, it's a different team now, right?
Jeremy Rutherford was, I believe, on the Rona Roundtable yesterday.
Yeah, Dan O'Neill wrote this article. It wasn't Rutherford. O'Neill's the columnist there, I believe. And he basically was like, you know, this team's different now. They're moving Jackman around a bit, down a bit, and they've gotten rid of Perron, and John Davidson's not here anymore, and Dave Checketts isn't there anymore, that old MSG connection.
Sure.
Different squad. You know, they're obviously going to rely on Jaden Schwartz, going to rely on Tarasenko. They brought all three goalies back. So this is it's a little bit of a different squad. It'll be interesting.
It'll be, yeah. Well, it's a team that we'll get to see. We saw them once, I believe, here in the first year.
We did. It was an overtime game. Yeah. I think the Jets lost in overtime or shootout.
Yeah, something like that. So we haven't really seen the St. Louis a lot. They're sort of a team that's under the radar. But we'll see a lot of them this year and in the coming years, given that we're all in the same, what are they called? Conference, divisions, whatever the hell the NHL actually determined they are.
What division are we in again?
I think
Central.
Central? Yeah. I don't even know anymore. It's hard to keep track of
that. What about the Metropolitan Division?
We never actually did talk about the Metropolitan. I don't mind the name.
What is that even, like, the Metropolitan Division? Come on.
Well, I have more of a problem.
And then there's also an Atlantic Division, right?
Well, that's the...
But the Metropolitan teams really should be in the Atlantic Division.
Well, that's the problem I have, is that the Atlantic Division has a bunch of teams that are nowhere near the Atlantic. I don't know if anyone's looked at a map yet, but Toronto and Detroit, they're nowhere near the Atlantic.
But all the teams that are on the Atlantic are in the Metropolitan.
That's my point.
What about Columbus? Is that a Metropolitan? Should they be in the Metropolitan Division?
Yeah, Columbus and Nice City.
I haven't been.
I went there last year. Took a road trip up there last year.
Has he answered the phone?
No, I got his machine that hasn't been set up by he hasn't set it up.
Yeah, he's got a voicemail that doesn't work.
That's 2 years going on.
Yeah, two years. So it's really hard to get a hold of the guy. He's definitely asleep. He had a chicken and egg burrito and passed out and went back to bed.
Better than last week when he told me he had lemon cake and went back to bed.
Where did he get a lemon cake from?
Well, it was his birthday last week. So
that's true. Right? Yeah. I forgot about that. In San Jose, Joe Pavelski also gets a contract extension. Uh-huh. 5 years, $30 million, an average annual value of $6 million for Joe Pavelski. He's 29 years old. The contract won't kick in until he's 30. 150 goals, 186 assists, 336 career points in 479 games.
Seems a little high to me. Yeah, a little bit. Dougie Wilson's style is to just pay his best players and the rest of the roster can figure itself out. I don't mind that strategy. He was paying him the same as Logan Couture, obviously different leverage situations. You mentioned Pavelski, pending UFA. Pavelski's never going to, you know, I think Pavelski's skating ability is never going to be great. So I don't think with age he'll necessarily be hurt that much. He can quarterback the power play. He can play all different roles for them. He can score. He's a leader. I think see them taking kind of, they see him taking, you know, the throne with Couture from Thornton, I think. They want to secure the middle. So I think those are going to be the guys. You know, Thornton's a pending UFA after this year. They want to make sure that Pavelski and Couture, if they don't resign Thornton, are going to be their guys up the middle for the next, you know, 5 years. Tad Hydru, probably. But
best year was 2010-2011 when he had 66 points in 74 games.
Yeah. Now, remember, though, the opportunity he's had is for the other guys being there is a little bit less.
So you're saying that they're going to bump. They expect him to get more of the important minutes and more of the opportunity minutes, let's say?
Well, him and Couture both can play wing if they need to, and Thornton's still going to be there, Drew. But yeah, you know, I mean, it's, you know, they load up their first power play a lot and things like that. But, you know, he can get opportunities. And I think it's a little bit high. I will say that. But I understand the idea of paying into the core. And they know what they're getting from him. There's no surprises, really, from Joe Pavelski. And they need a guy who's different than some of the other guys they have in their squad. I mean, they have a really offensively talented squad.
How is he different? Why don't you expand on that?
A little more intense, you know. A little more of an emotional leader. I think they need that. Come on. I mean, Thornton's never got the job done.
Well, we know he's not Joe Thornton's not going to be an overwhelmingly vocal guy.
Yeah, I mean, who else is going to be that guy?
Fair enough.
And he can play. I mean, he can play. He can put up points. And, you know, I think his skill set, they generally have guys who can really move. He's not the best skater, but he's got a good shot, and he sees the ice really well.
What I don't mind about the deal is that it doesn't kick in till next year. So this year he's only making $4 million. And then next year it's going to start at the $6 million mark. But after this year, both Thornton and Marlowe come off the books.
Right.
And if they re-sign them, and I would expect that they're probably going to try to re-sign both of those guys, it's not going to be at the $7 million mark that Joe Thornton was making or the $6.9 million mark that Patrick Marlowe was making. So like you said, they can re-sign Thornton and Marlowe. It's going to be to less money, and then Pavelski and, you know, Brent Burns and Couture can take that step forward and be the new face of the franchise. They can be the new you know, top line, top minute players, while the old guys, quote unquote, can take a step back and play the roles that Pavelski and Couture had been playing the last couple of years.
And he's a good playoff guy too. You know, really good last year. He's had other seasons where he's been pretty good in the past. So, you know, I think they he's a little bit of the new guard there, and I think that I always liked his game. So I know a little bit high, but if it keeps him happy, keeps him in the core, he's going to be a UFA. You know, again, what he's got in the UFA market, I don't think any more than that. At all, but
I mean, if he goes there and they lose him, it only takes one person to overbid everybody. How you can't
sure,
replace
but you're,
him.
You know, you're also going to get Drew 60 points from him, likely.
Right. I mean, so. You know what you're getting. He's not going to become. I mean, he's not going to be a point of game player.
Well, since he's been in the NHL, he's been a 60 point guy. You know, 2008-09 he had 59 points. 9-10 he had 51, but in 67 games. And 10-11 he had 66 and 74. 2011-12 he had 61 and 82. So, I mean, he's going to be a 60-point guy. I mean, that's you know, that takes you to the kind of that level of, for sure, second-line center, and then maybe the 1B on some teams. So. Mm-hmm.
All righty. Why don't we go to break? When we come back, we're going to talk about the Hockey Canada and Bauer Hockey Survey that took place regarding hockey participation in this country. Some interesting results there. And still to come on the show, Steve Laterente, the media reporter for the Globe and Mail. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. I'm reliably informed that the renovations of Rumors have been coming along swimmingly. Place looks great. Going to be reopened August the 12th. So if you've been jonesing for comedy, and I'm sure you have been, only less than 10 days away, Rumors Comedy Club will return. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club will reopen. Steve-O from Jackass. Starting off with a bang when they reopen, August 14th. Tickets still available. Check them out online, rumorscomedyclub.com, or give them a call, 204-488-4520. That's Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Richie, interesting study commissioned by Hockey Canada and Bauer Hockey to try and determine the level of participation in hockey in Canada, of kids in hockey, and some of the problems associated within that. According to the two organizations and the results of the study, approximately 90% of Canadian families choose to not have their kids play hockey. Strike you as a big number?
That was a big number. I was surprised by that.
I was surprised about that, too, because you think everybody's playing hockey. You all sort of that's your sort of assumption, and obviously the numbers do not bear that out. A survey was conducted of 875 non-hockey-playing families in Ontario and Nova Scotia to try and find out, to better understand why they don't play the game. The top four reasons were given: one, it isn't fun; two, it was too time consuming; three, there's safety concerns; and four, the affordability of the game to play hockey. Let's try and take those point by point. To me, it's stunning that the number one answer for why kids aren't playing hockey, according to that survey, is that it isn't fun.
Yeah, that's surprising to me too, Drew. I mean, I get is that the perception is that it's too intense, or there's certain aspects of the game that, you know, I don't know.
Isn't fun? I mean, this is supposedly our national game, our national obsession, our national pastime.
I think the most part, the kids that I've been involved with coaching and playing, I mean, you're still having fun at the end of the day, and the kids are always having fun. So I find that almost shocking.
What does it say about the way that we are sort of playing youth hockey and how we're you know, engaging with the youth in hockey that it isn't fun is high up there as an answer?
Perception. Is perception reality? I guess that's the question as well.
Well, I mean, these are non-hockey playing families.
Right.
It's not clear if they've never played hockey or if they played hockey and then
Good
stopped.
Point.
So that's, I mean, that's I think a fair question to inquire, because if these were families that played hockey and then stopped playing
hockey,
that's
more worrisome.
It's more worrisome. If they never started, that's a separate issue altogether.
And that's worrisome too, but a little bit less worrisome because, you know, if you get them in the game, maybe that changes their perception. But if they've experienced it and that's how they feel, that's not good.
Are we playing too many games? You know, you coach hockey.
I think they play too little games and too many games and practice too little. That's my issue with it.
You think that they should be practicing more?
Yeah. But the problem is the cost. And that gets to point D.
Right. But point D, you would think, I mean, if I had asked you this question beforehand, you would have said affordability, ice time, equipment, everything else would be higher on the list than just fourth.
Yeah, I thought it would have been number one.
Right. Because, you know, you think about what it costs to play hockey. You know, the ice time we know is in short supply and it's very limited. And that's why you're running out to the rink at, you know, 5:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're desperate for ice time.
Right.
But you would think that if, according to the survey, it's only the fourth biggest reason as to why people aren't playing hockey.
Hockey is an expensive sport, so that gets to, you know, the game and the practices and all that. But I do think that, I think one factor is, and maybe they're all tied together, is we've talked about it on the show. I think last summer we talked about it after the Randy Turner feature in the Free Press, which was very telling, I thought, extremely informative about the intensity surrounding specialized hockey development. You know, so what you're kind of having is haves and have-nots, I think. Either you're in this to kind of make the NHL, or you're not at all, and that's the worry. Because you can still develop the top-end players, but you don't have the same following of the sport if it's just guys who are going through playing all year round and guys who aren't playing at all. Because that could be the issue, Drew, you know. When we were playing at that age, we kind of played different sports, and now less and less they're playing different sports. And if that's the case, what happens is, you know, after a while, if you're just not developing at that level, you say, okay, you know, hell with this, and I'm going to do something else. Huh. And you're not going to come back except for maybe a little bit of wreck, and that's a problem. I think that's happening.
I think a big issue is, I mean, when I played hockey, I mean, I was never any good. It was obviously, from the day I skated on the ice, I was never going to make this a career by any stretch. But, I enjoyed it. I played with my buddies. It was something to do. And it's like, you know, any sort of recreational activity. But by the time I was, say, 12, maybe 13, there really wasn't a place for me to play anymore.
Right, and that's another issue.
Because you're 12 and you're 13. Well, okay, you're getting scouted or you're getting recruited, if you're any good, to go play in the double A levels or the triple A or whatever it is. But for the, you know, the regular hacker, you know, where was I supposed to continue to play hockey? Well, and for about probably 6 years, the only time I'd play a little bit of shinny in the winter.
Right.
But until I was old enough to join like a men's rec league, which I'm just there for the beer.
Yeah.
There was nowhere for me to play for 5 or 6 years.
No, I mean, the house leagues, I guess, cover that to some extent. I don't know what they're like
these
days.
How many house leagues were there when you were 14, though?
Yeah, I guess.
There really weren't any. It was, you know, at that point in time, it was, you know, the pool of players had dwindled significantly.
Well, another thing is the physicality of it, and I think the safety issue is a factor as well.
Well, let's talk about the, I mean, safety
issue.
Safety
concerns is the third answer there.
Yeah.
And I think that's an issue for football, and I think for football foremost, but hockey as well. You know, it's a hitting, and I know they're changing the ages and all that jazz. But at the same time, you know, when you can have your kid in a non-contact sport versus a contact sport, a lot of parents are going to err towards the non-contact sport.
When you coached hockey, what level was the team you coached? A2 or something?
A1.
A1.
Yeah.
So
Bantam and Bantam 1 year and forget the 12 1 year, 14 the other.
Okay, so
I
when they
forget
were,
the names of them.
When they were 14 years old and they were playing A1 hockey,
yeah.
At that point in time, for the most part, I think you'd agree that none of these guys were going to make a career out of it.
NHL, yeah, at that point you're probably topped out for the most part.
Right.
Yeah.
Why should there be hitting in that level then?
Well, I mean,
there's no hitting in any rec leagues.
Yeah.
So when you're 14...
But you can't arbitrarily say, well, at one level there is hitting, one level is not for an age group. I mean, you have to be able... Because if you ever do make it the next year and you haven't hit for a year, you're in trouble.
Right, but okay, I understand that. So maybe it's, you know, and maybe A1 isn't the benchmark. Maybe it's A2.
I don't know if you can do it that way, Drew. I mean, maybe at a certain age you can do it, but I think I don't mind the rules for hitting. I mean, that's a part of the game, but I mean, that's also a factor in terms of...
When I quit hockey,
enrolling your kid in hockey.
When I quit hockey, I was very short. I had no skill set to speak of altogether. I enjoyed playing because I was with my buddies and everything else.
Yeah.
But I wasn't that interested in getting hit.
Well, then, you know.
And so I had to
quit.
You're
in trouble.
Well, I had to quit for 5 years. And I only came back to play because like I said, I was able to join a rec league team, and, right. and my buddies were playing.
But hitting's part of the game. It is what it is. I mean, they're changing the age. What's the age going to be now?
I think it's 14 or 15. Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I'd have to double check.
At that point in time, I mean, you're going to need to playing the game with hitting and playing the game without hitting is such a significant difference.
Right, but if you're going to play, for the most part, I know it's arbitrary, but you can say, look, I'm sorry, you're not going to make a career out of this unless you're a really late bloomer.
Well,
I mean, is that 1 year of losing hitting and keeping a lot of kids in the game really that big a difference?
I would say it's a huge difference. Huge difference. Head up, everything. The way you play defense, the way you go into the corner. Come on, it's night and day. It's a whole different ballgame. It's like flag football and tackle football.
Sure, I get that. But I mean,
I love going up the middle when I'm playing flag football, you know, for a player, and the guy wouldn't want like going up there when he's going to get hit.
Naturally, which I understand. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, then how does, knowing these numbers, getting these responses from people, how do you see Hockey Canada sort of answering the call that these responses provide?
I think you want to change the perception, first of all. I think you want to opt for more options, as you mentioned, to get people playing in a little more of a rec and a fun level. And the affordability is a huge factor. Are you going to get programs? Are they going to be government programs? I mean, I don't know. Is Bauer going to be investing in this? I mean, how do you cut costs? These kids all need $100, $200 sticks.
Well,
can't stick count. Only need $200 sticks.
Well, that in and of itself is absurd because I mean they do it because one kid on the team buys the parent buys a fancy stick for a kid.
I mean, does the cheapest stick have to be $45 now? Can they not make $20 sticks?
I won't pay. I mean, for myself, I won't pay more than $30 for a hockey stick.
Wait, where are you going to find one for $30?
Well, it's hard. But I mean, I look at these. I mean, I'm playing rec league against these guys who have these $200 sticks. I'm thinking, I'm playing rec league guys.
Well, I mean, yeah, but those are adults who can
those
afford it.
Those are adults who can afford it, never mind kids.
Right, and they don't have to, you know, that's a different story. It's when the kids need that and all the different equipment and the price of all that now. And then the ice time. And then the camps, if you're going to be obsessive about it.
Should there be an off-season for kids for hockey?
Again, you're not going to be able to police that. I do believe that there should be one, but they're not going to be able to police that.
I mean, when you were a kid and you were playing hockey, were you playing hockey all summer long?
No.
You were playing soccer or baseball or
both,
something else?
Both, yeah.
You know, in soccer, in Ontario, I believe they've changed it so that the fields, for I don't know what age cohort, but they've changed it so that the field's about half the size and it's a 5-on-5 game as opposed to an 11-on-11 game. Should Hockey Canada look into sort of shrinking the size of the ice surface for kids at a certain age?
That's not... Yeah, I got, but I'm not sure. Don't they play, some of them play these half-ice games when they're younger?
Maybe when they're younger, but
otherwise, you just get too big. There's not enough room out there anyways. I mean, I understand what you're saying, though, the off-season room. And then you're talking costs, too. I mean, parents who can hardly afford to put their kids in regular traveling hockey can't afford to pay for private camps all summer. And then what happens? Then their kid's maybe not as good as the next kid. And then they come up next year and they say, well, I don't want to play this anymore. You know, that's a problem as well. So you don't want to become a rich kid sport.
Well, it already is a rich kid sport.
It become more of a rich kid sport.
Sure. I mean, like we said before, I'm surprised that the top, you know, that affordability was only number 4 on this list.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah. Positive signs, if you want to take something positive about this, 73% of those who were surveyed said they'd consider putting their kids in the game in future. So it's not like they're closing the door altogether. Sure. And 40% said they would definitely consider it. So it's in the back of the minds, but it might not be front and center. And we'll see. I mean, the kids themselves are the ones who are going to have to push for it if they want to. And, you know, if you're a kid and you don't want to get hit, there's a lot more appealing things to do.
Well, I mean, shinny still is not hitting, though. I mean, you want kids to really just play the game and enjoy it. Yeah, that's a goal, right?
That's the problem. Right now, it isn't fun is the number one reason. And that's something that should concern Hockey Canada.
I don't think the safety concerns and isn't fun are mutually exclusive, by the way.
Oh, I agree with you. It's not fun to if you don't want to get hit.
That's right.
You're going to say it's not fun to get hit.
You don't want somebody running you in the head, slashing all that stuff. You know?
Sure. If there's a bigger kid and he's targeting you and you're small.
It's even the adults now in the rec leagues. I mean, sure. Some guys want to go there for beers. You mentioned have a good time. Other guys want to slash you in the throat.
Take a stepping stone straight from the adult hockey league to the NHL. Yeah. It's like you're 42, buddy. I think you're washed up at this point. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, Steve Latorrente, media reporter from the Globe and Mail, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Globe and Mail, Steve Laterante. Steve, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem.
Steve, you wrote an article yesterday in the Globe and Mail about the Canadian negotiations on the Canadian TV rights for the National Hockey League. According to your article, CBC is into their last month of exclusive negotiation rights. Do you expect them to get a deal done with the NHL?
It's unlikely that a deal gets done that quickly. They get a one-month window, essentially, to nail this down and to extend it for probably another 10 years. But there's a lot of variables, and it's probably likely that the NHL would rather hold on and see what other people might be willing to pay before it commits to something, unless CBC comes out with some sort of blockbuster offer.
You talk about, you know, Steve, the other networks. Do you see, and we've spoken to your former colleague Bruce Dalbeggin about this before, mm-hmm. do you see all three of the big networks getting a kind of a game of the week, or do you see it being two of the three?
On Saturday nights, I think you'll see one of them win out, whether it's CBC or CTV through TSN. Those are the two people that are in the mix right now for Saturday night. The NHL is interested in doing a Sunday night window of exclusivity as well. They already do that on Wednesday on TSN. That's somewhere where Rogers may be interested, particularly with their new Sportsnet 360, which could use a bit of a viewership boost ever since they took it over from the Score. So you know, you got all these pieces in motion as they try to figure out how to, you know, get people watching on different nights and how to get as many people as possible on that important Saturday night.
So that's kind of, do you think they'll lean more towards that NFL model of being inclusive of all the networks, or do you think it's kind of the dollars are going to, like, to me, it doesn't seem that you can maximize the dollars by including everyone, but do you see some, I know sometimes in the television business there's an offer that essentially is like, we'll give you this much, but you can't include the other party.
That's right. Whoever has Saturday night, I would think, just wants to have Saturday night to themselves, because you build that out as your prime programming. That's your marquee program. It's your flagship, essentially, that you build other programs around. For CBC, hockey's great on Saturday night, but what it really does is give them a chance to promote the rest of their schedule throughout the week. So you've got this great platform to tell people that, you know, your other shows are going to be on these days, and, you know, there's a big promotional thing there too. So I think when you're looking at your partners, people don't want to be sharing, for sure.
Steve, you mentioned that the NHL is trying to develop a sort of a Sunday national game of the week as well. How important is that to their NHL Canadian TV strategy?
It's pretty important. They do it on Wednesday with TSN. They do it on Saturday with CBC. And what they're trying to do is build that sense of programming that people have to watch at a certain time. Destination viewing is a big buzzword in TV right now, because all the other programming people put on their PVR, you know, they tape things, they watch it whenever they feel like it. And sports is one of the last places where people will actually gather around a television at a certain time and watch it together. You watch it with your family. You know, there's a bit of a camaraderie that goes on. And the more windows you have to do that by creating something special, the more people you're going to get to watch, and the more people you get to watch, the more lucrative it could potentially be for the broadcasters.
I know the NHL is the most important property in Canada, Steve, but is there any concern at all for a Sunday night game going up against the NFL in October, November, and December?
I've heard that suggested, but, you know, I have a hard time believing that a Leafs-Canadians game is going to have trouble drawing viewers against, you know, a Sunday night game in the NFL. I think even a bad hockey game in Canada pulls pretty decent numbers any night of the week. So if you could put it up, you know, a decent Canadian matchup in Canada on any night of the week should be a pretty good ratings draw.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Steve Laterante. He's the media reporter with the Globe and Mail. Steve, if Bell Media ends up getting the Saturday night Hockey Night in Canada package, why would that be on TSN and not CTV, supposedly?
Well, they could do either, but, you know, with TSN, a couple of things are happening. Everybody who watches TSN has to subscribe to TSN. So not only are you able to sell advertising to help pay for the rights, you're also able to get subscriber fees and higher subscriber fees also, which is pretty attractive. Because to put it on CTV, everybody could watch it. You get a bigger viewership, but you're not getting those subscription fees. And that's going to be an important part of how you pay for this package in the end. The NHL is said to want to double the amount it charges for TV rights to about $200 million a year. It's about $100 million right now, as I understand it. So you need to find a way to make that work financially, and putting it on a subscription channel is probably the way to do that.
Steve, you think they get $200 million a year?
Yeah, the rights have been, if you look at any sports rights in North America, they've been increasing exponentially every time they renew, and to double isn't particularly insane given the value of other deals in other countries. In the U.S., other networks have been bidding huge, but they're able to do that again because they get higher subscriber fees. Canada's a little different, but $200 million doesn't sound insane, according to the executives I spoke to anyway.
You know, on that point, I think the U.S. deal is 10 years, I believe.
Yeah.
Do you see, you mentioned earlier in the interview that it might be 10 years here as well. What would be the reason why the NHL would want a long-term and why the NHL wouldn't want a long-term deal?
Long-term just provides stability. And, you know, if you're able to get that stability, then you're going to go with it. Nobody wants to be negotiating these things every couple of years, and you want to know who your partner's going to be for the long-term so that you can set your programming, you can do promotional things. TSN and the CFL are a great example where, you know, they're partners. They don't have to coordinate their advertising campaigns. They don't have to coordinate their marketing campaigns, but they do because they understand that they have this long-term relationship that they both benefit from. So you see TSN putting out advertisements focused on star players, which is what the CFL is really trying to be all about this year. TSN doesn't have to do that, but as a partner, they do because they understand that there's a long-term benefit to both of them.
Is there an interesting predicament in terms of, you know, ESPN in the States doesn't really show a lot of hockey coverage because they have other properties. In Canada, if you don't get the NHL as a property, you essentially still have to show all the games and still cover it the same way. Does that play in at all?
Yeah, a part of getting the, and both, every broadcaster in Canada right now has some degree of hockey, right? I think Sportsnet actually has the most with about 250 games a year. TSN has, I think, 90-some games a year at CBC on Saturday night, obviously. And they use these shows to also promote their other sports programming, their sports center, their other news programming is based on having hockey. So, you know, you need to have some degree of hockey in the mix in Canada. You can't not have it, which makes it really interesting for CBC because that's a whole other conversation about what the CBC actually is if it doesn't have hockey in Canada.
Steve, we'll let you go on this last question. We know that as part of the NHL's U.S. TV deal, NBC also acquired the digital, sort of the internet, the web rights to hockey, yeah. And that's allegedly the great unknown going forward. Do you expect to see those rights as part of any new Canadian deal, or will the NHL sort of keep those excluded for a separate package?
It's difficult to say. What we've seen in most of the deals that have been going down in other areas of programming is that digital rights are a really important component of any deal. The broadcasters really think it's important to be able to control the stuff that goes around the edges of the game, having highlights, having the ability to stream the shows to your subscribers. All those things are very, very important to broadcasters like CTV or Rogers. So I think whatever deal does end up getting done, there's going to be a strong digital component included almost certainly.
Steve Laterante, he's the media reporter for the Globe and Mail. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care, Steve. Thanks very much.
Really, really interesting insight in terms of that negotiation. That's going to be a really interesting story to follow for the next year or so because it's going to change a lot of things, and hockey fans should realize, and I think they do, that that'll change the cap significantly, so it affects every team, including the Jets. Yeah. Next segment, before you know, we get into a couple of the news and notes, I think we need to call our friend because I believe he's awake.
He's awake?
It appears he's awake.
So why don't we go to break? We come back. We'll talk to the chicken and burrito man himself, Ezzie Ginsberg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
A bus driver to keep the change. Bless your children, give them names. Don't trust men who walk with canes.
One final segment on this Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers. Do we have Ezzie on the line? the vacationing Ezra Ginsberg. How are you, sir? How you're in an exotic destination, are you?
Drew Ritchie, I didn't think you'd ever have me on. It's unbelievable. Yes, I'm in the exotic location of River Heights, Winnipeg, enjoying my second week of vacation, and life is good.
Ezzy, I got to ask you, how did you negotiate the Gary Lawless contract where you don't have to work certain days in the summer?
Well, you know, as you guys know, I'm the hardest working member of a Legal Curve, so I had to negotiate that with the station, but they were happy to give me the couple of weeks, but... You know what I got to say?
They were actually happier to give you more than just a couple weeks. They said take the rest of the time off.
Absolutely. You know, but it's been great. But I got to say, I miss you guys. It's a little bit weird not to be there with you guys. So
well, you're in Winnipeg at home right now, right?
that's correct, Richie.
what have you been like? What did you do this morning? Like, you know, with your time off, what did you do?
Well, I texted you this morning because my intention was, and you guys probably thought I was just going to sleep in. Which I ended up doing, actually. I did wake up early, and I put the pot of coffee on, and I made myself a little breakfast, and my intention was to listen to the show and get ready. I'm going out to the beach later, so my intention was, you know, to get ready and then head out to the beach. But I actually fell asleep and then woke up, and I have caught part of the show, but, you know, I'm just relaxing. You know, I'm taking it easy, enjoying my my vacation time, you know?
We're also going to the beach later, and we did the show. But that notwithstanding that fact, Izzy, we mentioned earlier that you were having, like, I read your text on the air about the breakfast burrito. Now, confirm this for us. Did you make all of the ingredients and put together a burrito, or did you just make a frozen burrito?
It's a really good question, Richie. I'm happy you asked that. my intention was to just make some scrambled eggs. I'm a big scrambled eggs guy. I'm very healthy. I like to have my scrambled eggs, my vitamins and everything like that. And then I put together a nice little chicken and egg burrito, put a little sriracha sauce on that thing. And
did you make chicken?
It was delicious. It was a leftover half chicken that I had prepared earlier in the week.
Oh, yeah, prepared. Bought from Safeway.
But it was delicious. It was very good, very good. Thanks for asking, though.
And then after you ate it, of course, you had a nice workout.
No, I went right back to bed, actually. I fell asleep, so...
Is there a possibility you, in fact, ate the burrito while in bed?
No, I that's dangerous. Remember what happened to the woman from Mamas and the Papas? That's not...
Mama Cass, oh my God, is he?
Yeah, that's not... You can't do that, Drew. That's ridiculous. For all the kids out there, don't eat while you're in bed. That's you can choke on your food.
All right, Ezzy. We appreciate hearing from you, and we look forward to having you back in studio next week and enjoy, I guess, the remainder of your vacation.
Thank you, guys. It's been a great show. Finish strong, boys.
Thanks, Ezzy. We'll try our best to finish strong. There's our good friend Ezra Ginsberg on vacation from River Heights. Let's talk about some NHL news and notes to wrap up this program. How about that?
Kramer goes to fantasy camp.
Kramer goes to fantasy camp. Exactly right. Kramer goes to fantasy camp.
His whole life is a fantasy.
Supposedly, Paul Allen
wants
to purchase an NHL team for Portland, Oregon.
It would have been really, you know, convenient when there was an NHL team for sale for 4 years in Phoenix to just take this rich billionaire, take the team, drop him in the Rose Garden where the Portland Winterhawks play their games. I'm not sure how there's some issue with visibility from the upper deck and such, but in any event, drop him in there, and then it'd be nice. You have a 30-team league. It would have worked well. But no. The NHL is considering expansion. Because, you know, the quality of some of these games is exceptional at $150 a pop, which is cheap, some of these arenas. We need two more teams to even out the divisions. God forbid one team have a little bit more flying to do. We need two more teams, more expansion. Have you seen the third and fourth lines of some of these teams? And if the numbers in Canada are true and nobody playing hockey, oh, it'll be great for the next, for the next 20, 30 years. Come on. I understand you want to get Paul Allen involved. You have a team for sale. Move the team there.
If Paul Allen wants to be an owner,
yeah,
you find him a team to buy.
That's right.
That's what David Stern does in the NBA. David Stern isn't always about expansion. David Stern, a wealthy individual, comes to David Stern and says, I'd like to buy one of your teams. David Stern moves heaven and earth to find him a team to buy. You know, okay, owner of whatever franchise, you don't have as much money as you thought you may have had. You know, somebody would like to buy your team for $550 million. Mm-hmm. Would you please do the deal so I can get this billionaire into the NBA fraternity of ownership?
Based on the reports we heard about Seattle earlier in the week, are they trying to expand to both places?
That's by the sounds of it. They want to put two new teams. First of all, I love that neither of those two new teams are going to be in the Toronto market.
Or Quebec.
But they're going to go to Seattle. They're going to go to Portland. They're going to go to Las Vegas.
Even one of the two. Even then, it's ridiculous. You know, forget the divisions. If your best markets are in Quebec and Toronto, just do it and figure it out. But no. And they have Phoenix there, which is the biggest disaster. Come on. You know what it is? It's a cash call. Let's be honest here. That's what it is. It's the owners wanting the expansion fees.
That's right. But if you're Paul Allen, why would you pay the expansion fees? Just say no. I'm not going to pay you $400 million for an expansion team. I'll just go buy one of your teams.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can buy a team for $70 million.
That's right. And that's the difference between say, the NBA, the NFL and the NHL. The NFL has always pretty much said, if you own the team and you want to move it, we're not going to stand in your way to do it.
Right.
You know? And that's sort of, you know, that's why the St. Louis Cardinals ended up in Arizona. That's why the Los Angeles Raiders ended up back in Oakland. If you own a team, you can pretty much leverage that ownership against the city you're in. We've heard the Vikings have always been, that's how the Vikings ended up getting this new stadium.
Right, L.A. or whatever.
They used L.A. as a stalking horse. Well, I own the team, and I'm going to move it where I am. Only in the NHL do they say, whoa. We're committed to the Phoenix market. Even though you want to buy the team, we're not going to let you move it.
Got my Vikes tickets, by the way. They're really cool. The last game of the season is against Detroit. And it's a final home game in the Dome. It's a really cool ticket.
Yeah?
I'll show you. Yeah.
You'll show me afterwards. Yeah. Are you going to go down to the final Vikes game there?
It's in the end of December, but it's a Lions game. But we'll see.
How many times? What have you seen the Lions now? Three times?
Yeah. My brother's a massive Lions fan, so we end up seeing the Vikes and the Lions every year. Not
specifically for your brother.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's just the way the schedule seems to fall is that we always end up in Minnesota for the Vikings and the Lions. And as soon as we get down there, we're saying, I can't believe we're watching the Detroit Lions for yet another year.
I think they should expand to Orlando. So they have a team in Orlando, Tampa, and Miami.
You're done with the NHL.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good plan. I think that's a good idea. Some signings from around the NHL. Mark Frazier signs a one-year, $1.275 million contract with the Leafs.
People didn't understand sometimes in Toronto that if the arbitration wouldn't have been able to walk away because Frazier was asking for $2 million. But the over-analysis in that one, I understand analyzing these little Wheeler and Bogosian deals that we're doing here. But we didn't sit and talk about Paul Postma's contract for 4 hours. They talked about Frazier's contract in Toronto like it was the end of the world.
Have you seen their defense? He might be an important cog of their defense.
Yeah. I think Randy Carlyle really developed him nicely, and I thought Frazier, he's actually one of the good guys. And I was happy to see him, get a deal like that. And, they met in the middle, and it was reasonable.
That's a team, the Maple Leafs, just sort of off topic, that I look at them, and I just don't see how they replicate the success they had last year.
Adding Clarkson.
Yeah, you're adding Clarkson up front, but your defense, you were holding it together with tape last year.
Well, Bernier could really help that defense, though, Drew, and Carlisle's a heck of a coach.
Well, I know Carlisle's a heck of a coach, and if Bernier stands on his head and is the goaltender that a lot of people have had him pegged to be for years, that's one thing. But you look at that defense, and especially, I don't understand this talk about trading Phaneuf.
Well, it's his contract situation. It's a factor, right? Pending UFA after this year.
Right. But still, at some point in time, you need to have NHL defensemen out there.
Well, that's the problem. And you don't want to rush Morgan and Riley. That's the issue.
Well, anytime they rush a guy, you see what happens to them. Look at their defense. Right. Phaneuf, Gunnarsson, Frazier, Gardner, Paul Ranger, Corbinian Holzer.
What's the difference from last year, though?
That's the I don't know how they did it last year. I think it was smoke and mirrors last year that I had trouble seeing them replicate the success.
A bit of smoke and mirrors. I understand that.
Can you win with Colton Orr and Fraser McLaren playing significant minutes for a second straight year?
I don't know if it's significant minutes. They've added Dave Bolin too, Drew, so they're a better team.
They're a better team up front.
Yeah.
But on the back end, how is that compensating?
Yeah, but Clarkson played in a New Jersey defensive system. Dave Bolin's a very good two-way center. They have added guys who are defensively responsible. And he's a good coach. They took Boston that far with that D. The D isn't great. It's not absolutely god-awful. Franzen, if they sign him, that's an issue right now because they haven't signed Cody Franzen. But Franzen, Phaneuf, You know, Gunnarsson, these guys can move the puck. Lyles can skate and move the puck. Gardner. So, I mean, you know, you get some good goaltending. The defense isn't amazing, but it can move the puck, and I think that's important here. They got some good speed up front. You could argue they're the fastest team in the league in some circles. So the whole team can skate. You know, they're going to be tough. That's some good additions there. Boland, Clarkson, character guys, too, and guys who can do a lot of things.
Another signing in the NHL, Matt Zuccarello, a guy signs 1 year, $1.15 million contract with the Rangers. A guy you've always liked.
Yeah, I like him because he's a passer and he's tiny. He's like 5'7", 5'8", and he's not going to be the most physical guy.
What you're saying is there's still hope for me?
Yeah, you still have a chance, Drew. But you know what? He can play on the half boards and the power play and second unit. He can feed the puck to some scorers. He can add a little bit of skill for a pretty cheap price. I like him.
In Calgary, they signed TJ Brody to a 2-year, $2.125 million contract.
I like TJ Brody. Came into his own a bit last year. He can move. He can skate, and he has an option. He has opportunity there with essentially Weidman and Giordano and a bunch of no names. You know, he's part of that top four for sure
on their defense there.
Yeah, and by merit to an extent, and by default to an extent as well. So he has an opportunity to really carve out a nice contract for himself after this one, because their team is so bad.
Sure. And then the final one, the Swedish defenseman Alex Edler suspended for the first two games of the Sochi Olympics. That stems back to that knee-on-knee hit on Eric Staal from the World Hockey Championships.
Which is deserved. It was a terribly dirty hit. You know, people are like, well, you know, you can go both ways on this, but people may say, it doesn't really matter. It's not going to be in the competitive, you know, in the elimination games. But you're playing in this Olympics. It's a short period of time. You develop chemistry. Mm-hmm. You drop a guy in for the third game. Certainly, you'll be in game shape from playing in the NHL all year. But maybe the guy he's playing with or the players he's playing with needs to develop some chemistry with, and it causes some problems. So that may be an issue. And I don't think you can necessarily overlook that.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock, cheer or jeer for this week?
Well, I'm going to cheer Bob Murray, not the Bob Murray we had on the show, although we appreciate his time. The other Bob Murray saying, giving team with Solani, just doing whatever, telling him, you know, if Solani wants to play, all I care about is if he wants to play, if he wants it. If he wants it, we'll make sure this gets done. We will give him basically whatever he wants. We will work this out. And all I care about from him is to make sure that there's a desire there. And I know fans in Winnipeg are especially excited because I believe the third game of the season would be against the Anaheim Ducks, and they'd love to see him play. So if Teemu still has that fire burning, they're showing a veteran player great respect. And you know what? Some would say, oh, that's what you do. But look kind of what happened in Ottawa. It's never a guarantee, so he's handling it right, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm hopeful that Teemu will come back for another year.
According to the poll on illegalcurve.com, it's the second most anticipated game this year, with 20% of the respondents saying that they're looking forward to that Anaheim Ducks game, which would be the second home game of the year, Sunday, October the 6th.
Right.
That would be the Teemu game this year. There's only the one time the Ducks are in Winnipeg. I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers by cheering Nicklas Lidström. He's getting his jersey retired on March the 6th in a game that's fittingly against the Colorado Avalanche. Mm-hmm. Of course, we all remember the wars that the Avalanche and the Red Wings had together with Nicklas Lidström was an integral part of that. So cheering Nicklas Lidström on the occasion of getting his jersey retired this upcoming March the 6th. A no-brainer if there ever was one in terms of jersey retirement. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to Bob Murray, the agent for Zach Bogosian, and Steve Latorante, the media reporter from the Globe and Mail. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on IllegalCurve.com, on iTunes, and on TSN1290.ca. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim, for Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock, and for the vacationing Ezzie Ginsberg, who returns next Saturday, hopefully, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.